Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. It's been a massive week in media, and our expert commentator this week is Adstream boss Peter Miller, who's worked at most of the companies we'll be talking about.
Good morning.
Also joining us for an exclusive is the senior team behind Inotion, the ad agency we're about to be hearing a lot more from. New business director James Welsh.
Good morning.
And Amanda Wheeler.
Hi, Tim.
This week, Murdoch's in and Blackley's out at 10. The great group buying site squabble. Kerry Stokes' big merger plans for Seven and the West. Expedia's earthquake faux pas. PhD tells brands to up their game. Ben Elton's live from planet Earth. It's dead. And Jack Matthews takes the helm at Fairfax's Metro division as the company profits bounce back. So first today we turn to Inotion. As I say, with us we have Amanda Wheeler, General Manager, and James Welsh, New Business Director. Now, Amanda, most people would probably think of you, and by most people I mean me anyway, as the in-house agency for Hyundai.
Yeah, it's a common misconception, but we see ourselves as anything but an in-house agency. Our relationship with Hyundai is that of a traditional agency-client relationship, and then we also have Kia, on the other hand, as our two foundation clients. But we're, you know, ready to take on new business, and that's our next phase of our development.
And I guess that's why James is now coming on board. So, James, you were at Oddfellows before, just joined Inotion this week, or announced it this week.
Just announcing it this week, and what we're looking to do is just change that perception in the marketplace as being the in-house agency, and really just letting people know that we're here and we're open to talk to other clients as well.
And the brief is to pick up new business in other sectors.
Absolutely. So we're looking at, you know, which other sectors to go after, and who do we want to work with, and who would want to work with us, and taking it step by step, just to really work out what our story will be to those people.
Now, Amanda, one of my favourite ads last year was I think it was the Kia one with Grandmaster Flash.
And, oh, Kia Sportage.
Yes, which I absolutely loved that ad. Which pieces of work are you most proud of from the agency over the
last few months? For the Kia, I think the Sportage ad stands out. You know, we had for the compact SUV segment, it kind of, you know, looks and feels very different for what it is. And on the Hyundai side, I think some of the work that we've done for relaunching that brand and making it feel very different, and probably leading the way, would be the Hyundai i45 spot where the rain comes down on the car, which was all shot in camera. So it's a beautiful ad, and it really speaks to the quality of the product that we want to emphasise.
And the story of the agency in Australia, how long have you been around for?
We've just been open for about just over 2 years now. And I guess we've spent those first 2 years growing rapidly with that of our foundation clients. So consolidating those business, making sure that they're on the right paths, and really, you know, kind of getting that trajectory. Now we've got a full agency, a full service agency bedded in.
How many staff do you have now?
We've got nearly 40 staff, and we're constantly adding to that at the
moment.
And
that's all based in Sydney at the moment?
All based in Sydney, at North Sydney, and offering everything from events and sponsorship to the traditional above the line elements and digital elements as well.
So the appointments you're making this week, James joining as new business director, also Joe Gilbert joining as well.
Yeah, we've got Joe joining us to take over our events and sponsorship divisions. Both of our foundation clients have got big sponsorship products like Kia's Australian Open, Hyundai A-League, and big events that we kind of look after as well. But also it's a great, you know, possible area for new business to come in on a project basis to talk to us about.
And James, where do you see the opportunities in this market?
The opportunities here are very much as an agency, we do have the full service. And what we work very closely with a lot of other collaborators as well. We have a media in-house media team.
Right, which is relatively unusual.
Which is very unusual as far as I've seen in this market, to have a media planner within the agency.
So this is people who've come up within a media agency background, is it?
Absolutely. So Dan has been running that team since the beginning.
And this is planning and buying?
He works very closely with Initiative on both Hyundai and Kia. And so that's something else as an agency. It's an offering that other agencies don't have. But also from the events, Jo has got a wealth of experience, and a couple of the events that she's working on right now are exciting pieces that we can talk to you about shortly.
You can talk about them now if you like.
Well, shortly. on the digital side of things, and there are some interesting apps that are being done for Kia in particular, an iPhone app that's coming out shortly, which is just an exciting way of bringing another part of one of the campaigns to life. So we've got the traditional side of things, but we've also got the non-traditional side of things, which is rare. Lots of agencies talk about the 360, but I think it's more about really just having every consumer touch point covered off by different areas. So that's where we're going to be going out after clients who are looking for a one-stop shop, but also different areas.
And Amanda, your ambitions for the agency, how big do you see it?
We don't actually want to get to be kind of mega status. We actually, a lot of us have worked in various different agencies around Sydney, Australia, and the world, really.
What was your route before in Ocean?
I've worked at Mojo most recently before in Ocean, and prior to that I've worked client side and actually started off as a journalist, so a circuitous route. But it gives you kind of a good world breadth, and a lot of the people who work for us want to kind of have a smaller team. A lot of us have come from bigger agencies. So, we want to be able to be a good mid-size independent agency that has a number of different categories on our books.
Well, next, big moves at 10. Well, drama in the TV world this week, with Lachlan Murdoch taking over as interim boss of 10 Network after the ousting of Grant Blakely. Now, in a fortuitous piece of timing, our guest this week is Peter Miller, who's been in some of the biggest media sales jobs in the country, now with AdStream. Now, before we chat about 10, we should also probably just explain what AdStream does as well, Peter.
Yeah, sure. Well, AdStream's in the business of getting people in advertising agencies to the pub on time. It's a complex business. There's lots of operational things, and we have wonderful software-based processes that make all that work well.
And it's basically about making sure that the ad ends up in the right place.
And also gets to the point of approval in a seamless way, and is ultimately a quality file type for the destination. So it's a quality assurance business as well as a distribution business.
And in a previous life, you spent some time on the media side as well. What are your thoughts on the 10 announcement to begin with? So we've had sort of, 3 months ago, Grant was reconfirmed as the CEO with a contract, I think it was 2013, suddenly gone. What does that say about where 10 are, do you think?
Well, look, it's described as the least profitable of the networks. It's obviously run into a bit of a profitability wall. And I think the news gamble with Negus has sort of brought those realities into sharp focus. It looked like a gamble. He looks like late evening SBS to me. It hasn't worked. It's not rating. And I guess they just drew a line from current profitability forward and decided they needed a fresh start.
And I suppose the interesting thing as well is that there's been a lot going on at 10. So, we've had the lift that came from MasterChef. Then we've seen the launch of 11 that saw Neighbours and The Simpsons come across from 10, which made room for George Negus and that 2.5-hour run of news. Mm. What do you think of the 10 news lineup? Have you had a chance to see much of it?
Look, I've had a bit of a glimpse. I mean, I like the early news and followed by Sports Tonight. I like what they do with Sports Tonight later in the evening and what they've done with the one sports network. But I looked at Negus and it just felt wrong. It felt like the right show on the wrong station to me.
Yes, or I suppose maybe the wrong time slot.
Maybe the wrong time slot, maybe too much time.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours.
It'll be very interesting as well to see what Negus's contract says, so that, they've said there is going to be this review, which, some people think probably we won't see George Negus at 6 p.m. surviving. That would be my view. But it's interesting to see whether his contract, he remains contracted to the station, presumably. So we might see him presenting something maybe a bit late evening or something.
Yeah, look, I don't know how expensive he is. And I would think he's the sort of bloke who went into that role because that role appealed to him and primetime appealed to him. They might shake hands, swap a cheque, and George might be, heading out to greener pastures.
Well, next, Fairfax makes its changes. And where does Murdoch come into this, do you think, Peter?
We're seeing a bit of a pattern emerging, aren't we, of boards parachuting seasoned media executives into chief executive roles. initially temporarily, and then they become, in the case of Highwood, a permanent appointment.
Of course, at Fairfax, yes, because he came back to Fairfax as a board member, didn't he?
That's right. And look, I think the thing about Lachlan is that, A, he's a seasoned, very gifted, you know, like the DNA is fantastic. Not so much TV DNA, because his TV experience was with, you know, the Foxtel side of things. But I think the thing about Lachlan is, in some respects, is the thing about Greg Highwood. I think it's a very reassuring cultural appointment. He's a delightful bloke, very good listener, very sharp. People will go, right, I'll hang around and see what's going on.
And do you
think you won't have people throwing themselves off cliffs just because Grant's left.
And would you bet, and that's one thing, isn't it? Grant seems pretty well respected. People are already predicting that he'll pop up in a sales job somewhere else, for instance.
Look, it depends what he wants to do. He's a gifted guy. He's one of the cracking strategic sales and revenue-driven thinkers in, you know, across any media.
Well, next we will talk about those Fairfax changes. So Fairfax Media appears to be through the worst, and there's a new man at the helm of Fairfax Metro. That's all broken this week. So on Thursday we saw Fairfax make a profits announcement, which saw their EBITDA profits, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortisation, go up to $347 million for the half year, which is about a 7% increase. And revenue was up about 3% as well. So that's pretty solid. Financial Review Group went backwards a little bit, and they announced Jack Matthews as the head of Metro, which is part of this new structure that was put in place about 3 months ago with before Greg Highwood took the helm by Brian McCarthy, but it appears to be sticking with. So we'll now see The Age and The Herald reunited both the online and print mastheads under Jack Matthews. Firstly, Peter, the strategy, the right one, do you think?
I think it's dead right.
And it's worth mentioning you're a former Fairfax old hand yourself.
Well, I'm a former News Limited old hand as well, a bit of a nomad. Enjoyed both organisations. No, I think it's dead right. It's what they've done very cleverly with The Australian. And it's no surprise that I think The Australian newspaper app, to which I subscribe.
This is the iPad.
The iOS app. You know, it's a really fine expression of a fine newspaper on a smart device. And I haven't seen that out of Fairfax yet. It's sort of like, you know, the horses aren't all running together over there. And, I don't know Jack Matthews, but, I mean, he's got a big rap. He's in charge of that whole project. And I think you'll see a lot more coherence coming out in terms of the product lineup. I'm also impressed with that Greg hasn't thrown out the idea of a good restructure in order to spend his first 6 months contemplating a restructure. He's going with that plan. I think it's a smart plan, and then it's down to he and Jack to execute it well.
Now, you would have crossed paths with Greg, presumably.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
So what did you make of, I mean, I know the answer to this because you wrote a guest post from Umbrella, but what did you make of the Greg Highwood appointment as CEO of Fairfax Media?
Look, I'm not intimately aware of the reasons for Brian's departure, but look, I sense that he wasn't really enjoying himself, and the board wasn't enjoying him either. And you know, Greg was then one of the most seasoned media executives in Australia, not in a media role, and I think they must have been thinking well in advance when they invited him to join the board. And I thought it was a really classy manoeuvre. He's a very gifted guy. And like Lachlan, also a very approachable guy, good listener, I think I wrote that. People will give him a good run, particularly the creative side of the business. And that's the side of the business they've got to get right, online and offline.
There is a perception.
The money follows successful creativity, after all.
And there is a perception that Fairfax is in terrible trouble. Do you think that's maybe a bit unfair?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that I'm not sure that they've sent the right message out over the past couple of years on all the good things they've done. I think the impression is that they've bought business and they've moved the deck chairs around and they've concentrated on costs. And, you know, I'm not sure that wasn't part of Brian's problem. He didn't articulate a strategy that people believed in. I mean, it might have been a good strategy, but he didn't articulate one that people went, crikey, that sounds like it's on the money.
Do you know, with Brian as well, and so much I think is it's the confidence play, isn't it?
Mm.
Funnily enough, when I was writing the story of the Fairfax results, I stumbled upon a piece of video from maybe 18 months ago on the SMH of Brian McCarthy and Jack Matthews doing a presentation together. And J- Jack Matthews kind of up podium, standing at the computer, very confidently giving a presentation about, you know, the film Touching the Void and how it had a happy
ending.
Doing
a Steve Jobs impression.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, very charismatic, as you know. And then he introduced Brian McCarthy, who kind of came in and he sort of mumbled a bit and complained about how there was nowhere, the computer was in the way and he had nowhere to put his pieces of paper, sort of muttered something about being a print guy. Mm. And it seemed terribly symbolic, the fact that this computer was in the way of his piece of print. And and then he kind of, you know, made a couple of half-hearted jokes that nobody quite sort of laughed at.
So without any further ado, I had the easy part today, just to set the scene and sit down and listen and learn myself. I want to introduce Brian McCarthy. And Brian, as I think most of you know, has recently been appointed the chief executive of Fairfax Media. I think, Brian, this might be one of your very first public appearances. So you have the pleasure of seeing Brian in his maiden speech. And you know, I think we should, you know, Brian is facing some really interesting challenges at Fairfax Media that we face in all of our businesses. And you know, we're certainly committed to giving him whatever support we can as he works his way through that. But without stealing his thunder, please welcome Brian McCarthy, Chief Executive of Fairfax Media.
Thanks, Jack. Jack, a very valuable member of our team at Fairfax, and I've got my first problem already. There's nowhere to put my notes because of this laptop. See, I'm a hard copy man from way back, but I'm very flexible. You got to be. I can actually relate to that Touching the Void, Jack. This is not rehearsed. I haven't read the book, but I did see the movie twice.
And you didn't feel that this was not a charismatic leader, regardless of how good he was at the numbers.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think charisma's a bit overrated. You know, the truth is that if Jack Matthews works in this role exercises the full power of the Death Star that is the Age and the Herald, which are fantastic franchises. I mean, if that works, that'll be Brian McCarthy's legacy. That was his idea. He drove that change. Greg will implement it. He'll implement it well, but it wasn't his idea. And, Brian was an extremely experienced, hard-headed newspaper man, probably did everything he could do in there, but then people didn't appreciate it. And that's the hard life of being the CEO of a public company.
Well, next, Kerry Stokes consolidates. So Kerry Stokes has moved to bring his investment in the Seven Group together with his stake in the West Australian. Now, within the Seven Group, we have obviously Seven, the TV network, and Yahoo Seven, the online. Also Pacific Magazines, of which again, Peter, you're also involved in Pacific Magazines. We've definitely picked the right week to have you here, I think. what do you make of this move by Stokes?
Yeah, it's kind of two stories. There's one story which is about him consolidating his assets, and there's another bigger story about the strategic upside in putting together these two very large media organisations that are really across all forms of media. And I guess the strategic upside is, you know, how do you extract and leverage the learnings from all those media, and how do you take talent across to new platforms? I mean, there's Yahoo 7, they're in group buying, there's the network, obviously, digital TV. A lot of the coverage is really about, gee, this looks like it makes a lot of sense to Kerry Stokes. And I reckon that is half the story. He's a, you know, sharp, shrewd guy. He's going to be shrewd about his own dough and his own assets, but he's also going to be very shrewd about what's right for the business. And I think he's been very good for shareholders.
And that's the funny thing. A lot of shareholders do invest because it's Kerry Stokes.
That's correct. Yep. He's got a great reputation, and he's a trustworthy guy. People believe in him, and I think that's a reason they stick. You know, one of the reasons that they invest.
And I can see
confidence.
And I can see why it makes sense for the West as well, because yes, it's a newspaper. It's doing very well in a weekdays one newspaper town, but you know, you want other media assets really.
If your main asset
is a newspaper.
Yeah, it's got a lot of criticism for, you know, not being on the front foot digitally, for not being aggressive, and you know, massive brand in a one paper state if you exclude, you know, the Perth Sunday Times, and you know, never stepped foot outside it, sitting on no debt, knows exactly what the next 5 years are going to look like unless it does something innovative. Basically sleep at the wheel. People who drove that business got the sack. He's in there, he can do something with it. Really interesting.
For more on all of these stories, go to mumbrella.com.au. Next, group buying gets nasty. So far 2011, that's been when the group buying sites really began to get visibility, certainly sort of in terms of media commentary. Groupon, Kudo, Catch of the Day, DealMe, Spreets, you name it. And they're all kind of beating up on each other as well, which wearing my journalist hat is great fun, obviously, because I love it when they come and punch it out. What do you make of this sector? Because it's kind of come from nowhere, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, just setting aside the pissing contest between these guys, which is, frankly, looking at yourself in the mirror and being impressed. I think the real story is, and none of them are really telling it, because I had a look through all of the, I looked through the piece and the commentary, and it's all about eyeballs and audiences and networks and aggregation. But
yes,
it's
everyone
not
has
about...
a different claim to be number one, don't they? Some are saying we get the biggest number of people coming to the site.
Yeah.
Some we've saved.
Which,
the
of course, doesn't matter.
People.
Because what really matters is whether or not, the Roses people have actually sold out their 200 bunches of roses for $10 in 5 minutes. And I didn't hear too much of that sort of commentary. And I think there's a notion that it's getting to feel and look like spam. Mm. I mean, I've subscribed to a few of these things, not because I'm interested in, getting a bikini wax, but because I'm interested in seeing how closely the group buying organization's advertising offer is aligned to their core offer. So, with Kudo, their great expertise is in mass market with TV and
women's. This is 9MSN's play.
Yeah, 9MSN, Channel 9, the ACP Magazine Network, got a wonderful network of packaged goods and women's products, and you're seeing a lot of that, emerge in their offer base. And it'll be interesting to see how patterns emerge and whether or not Seven's ownership of Spreets or Yahoo 7's ownership of Spreets actually alters the makeup of those offers.
And do you think that was worth $40 million, the Spreets?
I don't know what they were making. I don't know what the multiple is, and I'm not even sure. I don't even know what the multiple should be. But they paid $40 million for it, so you can take your pick. It's clear that they were making some money, because I'm sure he didn't buy it for just the eyeballs. He would have been buying future profits.
Well, next, a marketing disaster from Expedia. So in a major marketing faux pas, travel deal site Expedia sent out an e-newsletter advertising a 72-hour holiday deal to Christchurch. Now, the fact that this went out the day after the town was devastated by a 6.1 earthquake was bad enough. The fact that it was illustrated with a large picture of the spire of the cathedral, which had come down, even worse. I guess that's one of those perils of advertising, really, isn't it? And clearly what had happened was the email had been prepared several days before, all automated, and somebody forgot to press the stop button or just didn't think about it. But yeah, you've kind of got to tread carefully, haven't you, when something like this goes on?
Yeah, look, I think it's a beat up. It could happen. I've seen it happen plenty of times. I remember Rockwell ran an ad for the space shuttle for weeks after the Columbia. Was it the Columbia that went up? And they decided that the biggest story would be to pull it because they were marketing their expertise in spaceonics or whatever you call it.
Spaceonics is a good word, I think.
It's yours. It's really bad luck. Those things happen. And I think once that, once the bird had left the cage, all you can do is switch it off. All you can do is pull it back into the cage and alter the message. But, what the real story is, what a horrific tragedy in our backyard.
Mm. And of course,
not Expedia. That's not the story. So people are spending a lot of time talking about that and wringing their hands about that. They've obviously got time on their hands, I reckon.
Now, what do you think of the media coverage of this disaster? But also, we've had this run of, big dramatic important stories. Mm. We've had the flooding. We've had Cyclone Yasi. What's your impression been of the way that Australian media have covered it? They've done a good job?
Yeah, I think this is newspapers' home territory. I think photojournalism is great because it doesn't dwell on anguish. It's not invasive for the person in the shot, or as invasive as, someone door knocking you with a microphone asking you if you're unhappy about the fact your entire family died, which sometimes happens on television. It can be very ringingly anxious experience to be in your own living room watching those kinds of things on TV. I will say this, though. I think all the newspapers have done a fantastic job with it, and also on the sort of tectonic side as well, not just on the human side. I think the TV networks have done an exceptionally good job, and I think they've had a lot of practice at it lately. And I think they've all backed off a little bit on the human interest side and gone about their business like a bunch of networks that have now got a lot of practiced journalists dealing with these types of tragedies after the floods, Cyclone Yasi. And now they're on board with this, and it's a heart-rending thing to watch, but I think they're doing a really good job of it.
And it was interesting seeing there was a piece in The Punch last week, I think it was, talking about 60 Minutes coverage of a devastated family going back where they'd lost people in the flooding. And the first piece was talking about sort of the level of intrusion it felt like. But then there was a really good follow-up piece by the 60 Minutes journalist explaining the whole process and how they'd spent several days with the family. Each day they would talk to them at the start of the day about what they were going to do, whether it involved them or not, and get their okay. And it was quite a good insight into how that story came on air. And you kind of realised that that there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes in order to get those 10 minutes onto air sometimes as well.
Yeah, well, that's a classic story about a story, isn't it? It's making journalism the story.
Next up, PhD sends a message. So media agency PhD has released a video telling brands that it's time to up their game before Generation Z walk all over the market.
If you work in marketing, you better start upping your game.
Because you haven't seen anything like us yet.
In just 10 years from now, we'll be buying and influencing buying
in ways that will confound you.
We won't just watch your ads. We'll expect smart, tailored content based on our social graphs.
Tailored for me.
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 And me.
We want to interact with it as we watch it. Not just with touch.
But with voice. With gesture.
With intent. You better embed everything that is featured with additional information, social APIs, and e-commerce functionality.
And we mean everything.
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 The car.
The skirt.
The hotel.
The app.
Because we expect to double tap on anything to get more information.
Don't worry. You'll offset the cost by on-selling any lead to those data aggregator type companies.
We'll spread it through our networks.
And co-create with you.
And when we do buy, there are normally more of us than there are of you.
We can change your business
in one trade.
As long as the deal is on.
Augmented reality
will be the new reality.
AR apps will almost function like special skills to help us navigate reality more effectively.
You wait and see what the iPhone of 2021 looks like. The clue is in the name.
And you better get used to paying us.
Our browsing, influencing, and purchasing data
will make some of us pretty rich.
But don't overstep the mark, otherwise we'll block you.
Mass blocks kill brands overnight and keep you up all night.
So if you work in marketing,
you better start upping your game.
Because you haven't seen anything like us yet.
So that one, one or two of our commenters did talk about how the kids were kind of like eerie little midwitch cuckoos type people, or from the Simpsons episodes of "We Know All Your Secrets." But it certainly got a good debate going. What did you make of it, Peter?
Yeah, no, I think it's awfully clever. You know, they're horrible little shits. You definitely wouldn't want to be their teacher. But very clever because. You know, there are a lot of senior marketing people around, who find it very dazzling what's going on with the younger, with the digital tide. It's coming in. They don't know, when to get on it, when to get off it. Don't know which wave to pick. And, PhD are positioning themselves very well as, someone who's got the answers and is very future focused.
Yes, I think the video was called "We Are the Future."
Yeah, oh, well, was it? Right, there you go. I missed that. But look, and it's gratingly awful. It's a horrific thing. And isn't that clever? Because hasn't it got people talking? I think there were more blog comments, whatever you call the comments underneath the piece, than I read on your website for a lot while, because it gingers people up.
It certainly got the conversation going, didn't it?
Yeah, which is the point, isn't it? I mean, at least it's the point. It's what I think's the point.
Well, finally, the end of Planet Earth. So Niners bowed to, I guess, what seemed inevitable and dropped Ben Elton. It was a sort of downhill path, and I guess the final straw was this week's third episode, which was bumped backwards because of the earthquake coverage, and only scored something like 189,000 viewers in that slightly later slot. Peter, if there is a pity about this, it's that it was risk-taking. It failed. Many people would say it wasn't good enough, but it was risk-taking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a risk putting George Negus on Channel 10. This was definitely a risk. You know, television is, so is publishing, launching new sections, launching new magazines. I'm not sure what the hit rate there in that market is these days. I don't think it'll be any different for the group sites. They won't all do well because their customers won't all do well. I think that's a shame in terms of the specifics. I mean, television is always about taking risks, because if you don't take risks, then you're doing the same thing forever, and pretty soon your ratings go down because people are going looking for you to take a risk. In the case of Ben Elton, I'm kind of the wrong guy to ask, because he never made me laugh ever. I didn't watch the program. I just watched the ratings, and they disappeared to no one. So
you were never a fan of Blackadder, I take it?
No, though. I was a big fan of Blackadder, but I didn't associate Blackadder with him. So him as a out front, yes, up front guy, obviously, you know, one of the funniest, you know, men on earth, but, you know, he's never delivered it to me front on.
That's all we have time for today. My thanks go to James and Amanda from Anocean.
Thank you, Tim.
And to AdStream's Peter Miller.
No, thanks very much.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Production was by Alice Terlikowski and Georgina Pearson. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.